Of course, I had summoned the Shrike. I knew that. I had summoned it by beginning my epic poem about it. In the beginning was the word. I retitled my poem, The Hyperion Kantos. It was not about the planet, but about the passing of the self-styled titans called humans. It was about the unthinking hubris of a race which dared to murder its home world through sheer carelessness, and then carried that dangerous arrogance to the stars, only to meet the wrath of a god which humanity had helped to sire. Hyperion was the first serious work I had done in many years, and it was the best I would ever do. What began as a comic serious homage to the ghost of John Keats became my last reason for existence, an epic tour de force in an age of mediocre farce. Hyperion Kantos was written with a skill I could never have attained, with a mastery I could never have gained, and sung in a voice which was not mine. The passing of humankind was my topic. The Shrike was my muse. A score more people died before King Billy evacuated the city of poets. Some of the evacuees went to Endymion or Keats or one of the other new cities, but most voted to take the seed ships back to the web. King Billy's dream of a creative utopia died, although the king himself lived on in the gloomy palace at Keats. Leadership of the colony passed to the Home Rule Council, which petitioned the hegemony for membership and immediately established a self-defense force. The SDF, made up primarily of the same indigenes who had been cudgeling each other a decade before, but commanded now by self-styled officers from our new colony, succeeded only in disturbing the peacefulness of the night with their automated skimmer patrols and marring the beauty of the returning desert with their mobile surveillance mechs. Surprisingly, I was not the only one to stay behind. At least 200 remained, although most of us avoided social contact, smiling politely when we passed on Poets' Walk or while we ate apart in the echoing emptiness of the dining dome. The murders and disappearances continued, averaging about one a local fortnight, although they were usually discovered not by us, but by the regional SDF commander, who demanded a headcount of citizens every few weeks. The image that remains in my mind from that first year is an unusually communal one. The night we gathered on the commons to watch the seed ship leave. It was at the height of the autumn meteor season, and Hyperion's night skies were already ablaze with gold streaks and red crisscrosses of flame when the seed ship's engines fired. A small sun flared, and for an hour we watched as friends and fellow artists receded as a streak of fusion flame. Sad King Billy joined us that night, and I remember that he looked at me before he solemnly re-entered his ornate coach to return to the safety of Keats. In the dozen years which followed, I left the city only half a dozen times. Once to find a biosculptor who could rid me of my satyr affectation, the other times to buy food and supplies. The Shrike Temple had renewed the Shrike pilgrimages by this time, and on my trips I would use their elaborate avenue to death in reverse. The walk to Kronos Keep, the aerial tram across the bridle range, the wind wagons, and the Charon barge down the Hooghly. Coming back, I would stare at the pilgrims and wonder who would survive. Few visited the City of Poets. Our half-finished towers began to look like tumbled ruins. The gallerias, with their splendid metal-glass domes and covered arcades, grew heavy with vines. Pyreweed and scargrass poked up between the flagstones. The SDF added to the chaos, setting mines and booby traps to kill the Shrike, but only succeeding in devastating once beautiful sections of the city. Irrigation broke down. The aqueduct collapsed. The desert encroached. I moved from room to room in King Billy's abandoned palace, working on my poem, waiting for my muse.